I am a system administrator. I am many things, but I am, first and foremost, a system administrator.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. And this is my wife, because she's hot and we needed some color at this conference. I love Login. It's a great magazine. It's our magazine, right? It's a sysadmin magazine. Many others say admin, sysadmin, but they're imposters. This is a sysadmin's magazine. So imagine my despair, heartfelt despair, when I get the April 2014 edition and I see an article that says, "The Death of System Administration." What? I'm reading this because I'm a sysadmin and I want to be around all my sysadmin bros and I want to learn all the cool new tips and tricks and all the stuff out of academia. And it's dying? Oh no. Then there's an interview with John Looney. Guess what that's about? Then there's an article by Elizabeth Zwicky, our beloved Elizabeth Zwicky. How to be a better system administrator. And then something else? What? I freaked. So I read through the magazine. And then my beloved Rick Farrow. I love Rick. Does everyone love Rick? Is Rick cool? Rick's cool. It says in there, like Elizabeth Zwicky writes in this issue, I am not a system administrator. What? Oh, I can still fake it by managing my own systems and occasionally even consulting locally. But I gave up on being a sysadmin when I found out that it wasn't very interesting in a very important aspect of it, building scripts and systems to automate the work that needs to be done routinely. I love Rick, he's my hero. Don't say that. And then in the interview with Todd Underwood, The Death of System Administration, we are in the final days of system administration. Yeah, you know, last I looked, that big EMP that was going to knock us back into the Stone Age hadn't gone off yet, had it? And the number of computers definitely is going down. Definitely is going down. I mean, it's not like everyone in this room doesn't have at least two computers on them right now. And then Elizabeth Zwicky, my beloved Elizabeth Zwicky, says, I once was an administrator, now I'm not. Ugh, stick a knife in my chest. Then at the DevOps Enterprise Summit 2014, an analyst from Forrester, because, I mean, when you want to know what's hot, what's really happening out there, ask an analyst. And most of all, ask one from Forrester. Those guys are on top of it, okay? Has this slide that just since, thankfully, the crowd got pissed when this slide came up. And this is undoctored. This is what it says. Dying jobs: system administration, network administration, storage administration, database administrator, ITIL, and tech zealots. That's me. Focus on siloed technologies. Oh, but the growing jobs. Oh, growing jobs. Look at those. We could be automation architects. Ooh, doesn't that sound like fun? So Lisa is no longer going to be a conference for system administration. It's now going to be a large installation automation architects. Pissed off. What it should have said, and I would have accepted this slide if it had said this. No. There we go. We just got a little bit of hope there for a second. There we go. Are we good? If it had said this, that with these skills, you can enable these new kind of operations, I would have totally bought it. Like, yeah, that makes sense. Definitely, if you know, you can be a good system administrator, or network administrator, or storage administrator, and really provide a good service engineering practice or workflow and process expertise. You can do that. That I can buy. I can buy that. But to say, oh yeah, these are dead. Really? This is like saying that, you know, the best chefs in the world today aren't cooks. No, they don't cook. Being a cook is a dying job, but chefs are where it's at. What kind of insanity is this? It's ridiculous. So if you listen through all these folks, both the good and the bad, the people we love and the people that we despise, you end up seeing this kind of stigma that system administrators are apparently, if you just listen to them, grumpy graybeards and bastard operators from hell, that we are stuck in the Dragon Slayer past and we're epic storytellers. We're tape swappers. The Google guys really like to use the analogy of tape swappers, which is only slightly less offensive than saying that we're printer jockeys. That we really love non-automatable tasks, that we somehow find pleasure in doing repetitive tasks over and over and over, and that's what we're good at. That we're unable and or unwilling to code, and that a junior level person, that generally sysadmin is sort of a junior level position, and they probably won't go much further. Does that feel like it describes any of us in this room? I don't think it does. I really don't. And I really don't appreciate it when people say it. One of the reasons I wanted to give this presentation is because I have been in the DevOps community since the beginning. I think I have a lot of credibility in that space. And I've also loved Usenix and Lisa for a long time. I always dreamed one day of coming to Lisa. And now I've spoken at Lisa several times, and I consider it a huge honor to be here in front of you. So I'm really, really bummed out by what's coming on, and particularly the things that are coming out of the DevOps world. And so I kind of uniquely feel responsible to come and apologize for some of these things that are being said. Because I know the DevOps thought leaders, they're friends of mine, they don't think this. If you ask them, what are you, they will say, I am a system administrator. So where this is coming from, I don't know. I really don't like it. Because this is the image that's projected of us, that we're these kind of epic storytellers, and we sit around like, you know, at the VA hall all day drinking coffee and talking about the good old days when, oh man, you wouldn't believe what that tape drive did. Man, tapes were flying everywhere, and it was crazy, but I was up to the task. It's not true. Now, we like to tell some tales, okay? Right? We all do. That's one of the fun things about Lisa, is we get to come together and we get to tell stories. This doesn't define us. Nor should it. Now, there's a couple of contributing factors that lead to the stigmas, right, that people walk away with. I think there are a couple of contributing factors that are true, or have been in the past. One is that I think that the, you know, automate yourself out of a job, I mean, is that new to anybody, really? Whenever you see somebody get up here and like, you should automate everything, it's like, duh. Keep it up. Yeah, we know. These are the oldest of our axioms. But to be frank, the tools that we had in 1998, you guys remember then? It was sucky. It was really sucky. The tools that we had didn't really allow us to do this, right? Automation back then was a bash script. That's what it was. But apparently now that's just not cool. We didn't have good tools in the past. We tended to use products as designed. This is something that particularly people entered the industry in the last 10 years, I don't think get or appreciate that in the times past, things were different. A lot of times we got training from vendors, and if we wanted to buy these big, you know, multi-hundred thousand, multi-million dollar systems, you need to use it as it was designed. You needed to go and get training, and you needed to do it the way it was supposed to be done, because if you didn't, you would have a problem with support, and then you'd be in all kinds of world of hurt. And most of our stories generally are about the time that we outsmarted support by doing the thing we knew that needed to be done, but the vendor told us not to do, and we got away with it, and we didn't void our contracts, right? There was definitely a right way and a wrong way. These things were fairly clear. And frankly, generally, the server room was a walled garden, and we were the gardeners. This isn't true anymore. Times have changed. Most of these axioms are no longer true. These are the conditions we grew up in and we worked through a lot of our careers in, but they're not true anymore. And unfortunately, a lot of the anger and frustration, I think, comes from people who don't properly acknowledge that that was the reality once upon a time. And it really drives me nuts when these guys, particularly a lot of the Google guys, will diss on most system administrators, but then they'll always open by, yeah, I worked at an ISP once, so yeah. I had root on a Sonos box, it was awesome. And then go on to tell us about how that's totally lame and busted. Really? Not cool. So what do essays do? What do we do? Fundamentally, you can go, but I actually pulled out the Armadillo book. I did. I have it. It's awesome. I love it. It's great. I pulled it out. I looked at that. I looked at a bunch of the things we've been talking about in the DevOps world. And every single time, it comes back to basically two things. We build and maintain systems to facilitate the needs of a group of users, directly or indirectly. And we support the users of the system to efficiently accomplish tasks. That's it. All of ITIL is in those two things. All of our daily practice is in those two things. We're building it and keeping it up, and we're helping people use it. So it pains me when we play these word games. Stupid, stupid word games. I can't believe nobody's like applauding this slide. Because does it piss you off sometimes? It's like, oh yeah, we're no ops. We're totally no ops. We have no ops. That's a non-op. Apparently I don't need to step there. We've got no ops, we've got post-ops, we've got DevOps, we've got SRE. These are not sysadmins. They want to say sysadmins no longer are needed because we have these things. But these aren't things. These aren't job titles, with the exception of SRE, I guess. These are philosophies of operation. This is how we take our developers and our QA and our testers and our security people, and we put them all together, and we have different philosophies of how we utilize that team. This doesn't mean that system administrators are not system administrators. It also doesn't mean that developers who are doing system administration aren't doing system administration, because they are. So we need to stop the insanity. It's getting old, really old. It's not moving the craft. Does anyone feel like, you know, reading a blog post about how system administration is dead, post-ops is the way of the future? Does that really fire you up and get you ready to change? No. But let's not be irrational. What do they mean? When I dig through all these things, what do they generally mean? What are they getting at? Well, first, cloud changes everything. We get that. Most of the world is software defined. And one of the biggest drums that the Google guys and the SRA guys will beat is that software is malleable. Everything is software. Software is malleable. Solve everything with software. Software, software, software. Software. Automate all the things. Write more code. You should write more code. You know those computer things, they run code. And you can write it. So you should do that. Because, like I said, software solves every problem. So you should probably write some. And of course, we're not cool if we don't work at Google and Facebook and Netflix. Because all of our environments are totally like that, right? Right. I mean, we have like hundreds of engineers running around every day. We all eat five-star meals for lunch. And you know, anytime we're just like, hey, I've got a programming problem. Oh, look, Rob Pike's down the hall. Yeah, we're all in that environment. Yeah, why didn't I think of any of this stuff? Oh, it never occurred to me. Never occurred to me. I mean, never even thought about it. Thanks for telling me. Glad I know now. Duh. Right? So let's look at the reality. From the development side of the house, one of the biggest things that we need to appreciate and really internalize and individually appreciate is that developers are not helpless anymore. They used to be. They're not anymore. And services are the new libraries. So when it comes to dependency management, it used to be once upon a time that a developer said, I'm developing this application in C++, and it needs to have this and this and this installed so that I can have that and make sure the headers are there and all this so I can go and build my application. Well, now they're saying, I need an AMQP server, and I need to have a XMPP server, and I need to have a Postgres backend. Right? They're using services out there, daemons in our parlance, like their libraries. And ops cannot bottleneck the development. This is one of the things that has happened in the last couple of years, is that developers who have gotten tired of hearing, like, yeah, you'll get that in about 3 months, or 3 weeks, or 3 days, go, I got a credit card, and there's this Amazon thing over there. I'll go just do that. And now, the operations reality, this is the reality for most of us. Most shops generally consist of three or less admins. Very few of us work in shops where there are lots and lots of admins. And it's cool when you do. I've done it once or twice in my career, and it was really awesome. But generally, there's less than three of us. In fact, in a lot of cases, it's generally one of us. Daily stresses of project work, daily stresses generally make project work nearly impossible, right? We all have that long list of things we'd love to do if we just had the time. Franklin Covey calls it the whirlwind, right? And it consumes our lives all the time. Frequently, IT and ops are being lumped together. This is a problem I'm seeing more and more. They're like, hey, we're hiring for ops people to come join our team. We'll be holding down the production website and really helping with our continuous deployment pipeline. Oh, by the way, we need somebody to hand out laptops. If you could also do that, that'd be great. Oh, yeah, this is totally the same. Thanks. And ops technology moves simultaneously too fast and too slow. So example would be Nagios. Holy crap, why isn't Nagios dead? I'm done, thank you. No, seriously, Nagios is the HP OpenView of the last decade. It's like the thing that was awesome at one time, it freed us from HP and IBM, and then it just would not die. Or another is Ansible, right? There's a lot of you guys probably still have Puppet or Chef on your list of things to try out and to move into your environment or something. And now, oh great, here comes Sultan Ansible. Great, now which one do I use? So some things move way too fast. Some things move way too slow. And generally this helps just frustrate your project list. So the dilemma. Yeah, we need, cloud really does change the game. And yes, software is more important than ever. And yes, I need ways of doing more with less and getting out of the way of the developers so I don't ever block my developers. But who's gonna build the clouds? Who's gonna run the clouds? And how do I keep up with all this technology? I think those are the real questions. System administration is not dying. It is, however, evolving. It's evolving very rapidly, right under our feet. And one of the things that is important for people, I think, to understand, and Lisa is a unique place to point this out, is that we are not all the same. Lisa is a really interesting conference because there are some of you that are here from national labs. Some of you are here from academic institutions. Some of you are here from brick and mortar companies that make things that make a lot of money but aren't terribly exciting. Some of you are here from web shops. Some of you are consultants. We come from all walks of life here. It's not like Velocity where we all sort of kind of cut from the same bolt cloth, right? Lisa is a very unique gathering of us from all different walks of computing. So it's very difficult when anyone wants to make big, broad brush strokes. And so if I make big, broad brushstrokes, and I paint right over the top of you, I do not intend to do that. What I will be talking about for the remainder of this talk is a number of technologies and things that we need to look at and consider. And they may or may not be appropriate for you and your business. And I do not intend to suggest that you should invest your time, money, or energy in learning something that is not applicable to you or your business. What I will suggest is that some of these technologies you be aware of, and that you appreciate what their strengths and their weaknesses are, and that you have them in your back pocket. But I'm not suggesting that if you do not use some of the things we're going to talk about in the rest of this talk, that you are somehow not cool, not with it. What's cool is taking care of your customer, your client, your users, in whatever environment that is. If you're running ZOS and you're taking care of your customers, rock on. Don't let anyone ever tell you otherwise. And especially if anyone from the DevOps world tells you otherwise, ask again, because that's not what they mean. And if that is what they mean, they're not one of us. One of the best examples I've heard of in rebut to the idea that system administration is dying is pilots. Most of us flew here. We were on planes. You know, we all know that those planes actually can fly themselves. We commonly like to talk about it. Planes can take off themselves, they can fly themselves, and they can land themselves. So why the hell are there people in the cockpit? Would any of us take a flight if there was an empty cockpit? No, never. But they don't need to be there. So why are they there? They're there because we need someone at the controls who can take over the event of a crisis, who can monitor the operation to ensure that it's running well and smoothly, regardless of what a computer thinks. We still need those pilots there. And there's not just one pilot, there are two. If you're in an international flight, there may be more. The pilots will always be there, and damn it, they always should be. In the same way, there will always be system administrators. Our roles may change, but we will still need to be there. And when we're in the coffee shop, we may tell a couple of stories about the old days. So why is all this so hard? And for me, for the longest time, it was the fact that I don't think many people appreciate that not only are we expected to fly the planes, we're expected to build them. Hey man, you don't have a cool dashboard that like instantly gives you your situational awareness? No, I don't, because I can't go buy that. I'm supposed to build it, and that sucks. And I've got all this free time to do it, because I'm one guy. It puts us in a rough pinch, right? We gotta build it so that we can use it. That sucks. It's a great opportunity for vendors, hint, hint. There are two things that we do require to evolve, to change, to make the conditions in the environment correct for change. One of those is that we need to have the freedom to innovate and evolve by embracing failure and learning every chance we can. So that really means that culture and management are important. They matter a lot. You need to have an environment where you can learn. And when someone does something that doesn't work, you shouldn't go like, oh, dude, you're totally an idiot. You should be like, wow, why didn't it work? What can we do? We need to acquire the skills. And that takes time, which means that support and education are very, very important. So how do we do it? So I'm going to go by section by section. We're going to look at a number of things that I think are, of all the things that are out there, are the things worthy of your mental energy and your time. First and foremost, divide and conquer. If you have legacy, try to get rid of it. Now, if you're all legacy and you're going to be all legacy, then just leave it alone. Like, it's fine, you know? I mean, just keep paying the rising support rates and get pissed about it, but keep doing it, right? If that's your business, then just do that. But when you have half legacy, half modern, life is hard, right? I also tell you, just so people don't say it enough, if you're excited about configuration management and you really want to use Chef or Puppet or something like that, putting it on your legacy environment is almost impossible. So if you're trying to get it to work, don't feel bad if it doesn't work. It's really bad. Use Chef or Puppet or something like when you go to a new environment. Don't try and put it on your legacy. It's really hard to like put in a completely automated configuration system on top of something that's already running fine in hopes that when you do turn on the automation, it continues to work fine. It's like terrifying. So with legacy, adopt SaaS wherever you can. If there are systems you get rid of, just get rid of them. Use public clouds wherever you can. And build and run internal clouds, right? One of the nice things about the modern world is that we can build these clouds and then we can just have a nice ubiquitous architecture that we can kind of put everything on top of. Development and deployment are changing considerably. We look at technologies like Vagrant, like Docker. We now have the ability, developers have the ability to do all of their work, to build these kinds of infrastructures without requiring anything in the data center. They can do it completely on their laptops. They can move those environments out. Vagrant has become the predominant model for modeling infrastructure as a service on your laptop, generally using VirtualBox. Docker can also use VirtualBox on your laptop and gives us a repeatable application container. The beautiful Docker is something, I'm supporting the Docker, Docker is a wonderful thing. Don't be afraid of Docker. Docker is a wonderful thing because in the future, your developers will be able to give you a Docker image or a name for a Docker image, and you'll take that thing and you'll just deploy it into production. And you don't really care what's in there. It's a black box. Hooray. Now I can care and feed for that black box, and I don't need to worry about how do I install it. The days of getting a tarball and a list of instructions of how to install, set up, configure, are sort of over. They can just give us that, and we can go and run it. Sort of like what jars were supposed to be once upon a time. And configuration management is not just for ops. Self-service infrastructure is always a sign-up away, and developers will use it if they can. If you haven't been playing with Vagrant or Docker, I'd recommend you try it out and check it out. It's really handy, particularly for doing test mock-ups that you can do right there on your laptop. Small's the new big. Everyone wants to move to microservices, what we used to call SOA, and build distributed architectures. And they're awesome, particularly because they're now containerized. But this does mean that we have to have a whole new set of skills that we need to get comfortable with. We need to be very, very comfortable with RESTful APIs. It means you need to be a curl ninja, and if you're writing code, you should be embracing OO. Message queues are everywhere and are connecting services, and I think it is a fundamental skill that every administrator should have. Once upon a time, you needed to know how to configure bind and send mail. Today, so what? So the things you do need to know now, you need to know RabbitMQ or some type of message queuing technology, because they're out there and they're everywhere, and if you don't have some amount of comfort with them, they're scary as hell. And also service coordination and discovery. So ZooKeeper, play with ZooKeeper. It's easy. You can get started with it and playing with it in a couple of minutes. Etcd is a fantastic alternative to ZooKeeper, which is out there. You can do everything with curl, a couple bash scripts if you desire. And there's a new service coming along if you want to be really snazzy called Console, which is super dope. Perl and PHP are dead. I'm sorry. And I have seen Perl 6, and it's called Ruby. I know. I'm sorry. I'll probably be outside smoking later. You can come and beat me if you wish. I may deserve it. I'm really sorry. I waited like all of you. I waited for Perl 6, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. I actually think I went to the Silicon Valley Linux Users Group in 2002, where Larry Wall came and told us all about Perl 6. Like, it was like 2002 or something like that, right? And I was just like, oh, cool, it's coming out, like, in a couple of months. What year is it? Is it 2014, I think? And it's not here? Really? Next year, in the promised land. The thing, though, is the Perl 6 spec is up, and I've read it, and I really don't like it. But Ruby, I really do like. And I'll tell you, I waited until Ruby wasn't cool anymore before I got on the Ruby train. And I actually do kind of like it. It was like, dude, Ruby's totally lame. And I was like, sweet, I can try it now. And now I use it, and actually I really like it. It is really nice. It is really flexible. It was about a day of playing with Ruby that I actually forgot it was Ruby and thought I was actually writing Perl. So it's definitely cool. Python and Ruby should be generally, I think, the standard go-to languages for administration today. Ruby, I think, is particularly important because of the fact that when we deal with these RESTful APIs for all these things, they're returning groups of objects, right? So if we have a language that makes objects a first-class citizen, it just makes things all that much easier. And that's where I really found a lot of love for it. Go is the language for ops. Is anybody using Go today? Playing with Go? A couple of people? Go is awesome. If anyone says Go is lame, they're lame, you know, like in your eye. Go is awesome. Go is awesome. Go is awesome. It's C made awesome. It's C that works. And particularly, I want to make this point clear. Even if you don't write Go, that's fine. But if somebody gives you Go code or says, hey, we're thinking about developing this in Go, don't be like, dude, why are you going to do that? Just be like, thank you. You're awesome. It produces static binaries with no dependencies. Which means that, like, the old, like, bundle it up into a tar and move it over there and do da-da-da-da-da-da. No, you get one binary. It just comes out. It's statically linked. And you just SCP it to where you want it to go, and it just runs. It's awesome. It's amazing. It's the thing that developers want to write in and the thing that we as operators want to deploy. Go is awesome. I would say that everyone today should know a little bit of JavaScript, and in particular, how to use Node.js. Now, Node.js isn't a thing. Node.js is nothing. Node.js is just a way to run JavaScript without a browser. That's all it is. Simple. So knowing a little bit of JavaScript, it's everywhere, it's around us, it's ubiquitous. It's important to know a little bit of JavaScript, and it can be fun and cool. And let's face it, Bash and Aux still rule, okay? I mean, I know people like to diss on bash scripts, but developers have written some of the most, like, biggest, gnarliest bash scripts I've ever seen in my life. So, you know, don't bash it. Remember, APIs are the new CLI. Being a hot jock on the CLI is not what it was in 1998. Times have changed. CLIs are the way. And this is why a lot of SAs are being pinched out, is because of the fact that the way you interact with AWS is not with the CLI, it's an API. Right? Now, some of the cloud vendors, like Google in particular, are very good at giving us command line tools which interact with the APIs. But the APIs are there. And that's one of the reasons that developers got way ahead of us, because when a lot of the cloud technologies came, sysadmins were going like, how do I use that thing? And the developers were like, it's got an API. Awesome! And we're like, shit, what are you doing? I'm somehow losing control and I don't know why. Another one is that HTML has changed. It has changed considerably. I'd recommend everyone, forget whatever you know about HTML. Go check out HTML5 and CSS3. In particular, the new client-side frameworks are really, really cool. In particular, one called Angular. Play with Angular. You guys have all seen Kibana? Things like that. You see a web interface, it's got rats and it's scrolling and it's awesome! Yeah, that's Angular. Angular is awesome. Again, these are things that you don't necessarily need to be using all the time. I'm not saying you should like go and be a script kiddie writing your own web pages again. But definitely know it, particularly because when you run into certain applications, understanding that Angular is a front-end MVC and you're doing a lot of things in your browser without communicating with the back-end server is very handy to know. And once you know what to look for, you'll be like, ah, Angular, backbone, whatever. And Node.js is really awesome for the back-end services. Node.js, I don't think, belongs everywhere. But if you're doing a back-end service, you're writing the front-end in JavaScript. Writing the back-end in JavaScript just makes sense, right? Instead of the old days where you write the front-end in JavaScript and you write the back-end in PHP, and it's just nasty. Metrics, metrics, metrics. We love metrics. And there are a lot of great solutions that are out there. Sokonis is here. Librato gave a great talk yesterday, I think, actually gave two. Datadog has some great things. I don't think metrics is their key advantage, but they do some cool things. And Graphite is a really good go-to solution when you're just not sure what to do. Plus, we have our old friends like RED Tool and all those out there. We have lots of great solutions, and it's fantastic. Graphite is one really to check out because it provides a lot of freedom in the way that you can use it. And it's a space to watch. There's a lot that needs to go here. Right now, we all need dashboards, and the tools that are available for building dashboards based on our metrics are really, really bad. And a lot of it is kind of an exercise for the reader. So watch this space. I think some really good things are going to come. Logging is a place that there's been some improvement, but sort of kind of incremental. Splunk is still awesome. Don't let anyone bash Splunk. Splunk is great. And thank God for Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana, otherwise known as Elk, because Elk is the thing that we all thought was the new thing that was finally going to dislodge Splunk, and then we ran it, and then we went, oh man, I miss Splunk. Particularly because running Elk involves like generally very large clusters that generally tend to be fairly expensive, and then all of a sudden that license from Splunk doesn't look so expensive anymore. JSON logging format as a format is here to stay. It took me a long time to get on board that train. But a lot of that honestly was because Splunk and a lot of the tools did not handle JSON input very well. They were still line oriented. Now they can adjust to JSON, and so I think JSON is here to stay as a logging format, and when your tools all support it, it actually is a fairly awesome thing. You know, Logstash is a great Swiss Army knife. Definitely a great thing to look at if you're ever trying to move logs from one location to another and kind of have that kind of logging router in the middle. It's a fantastic tool. And there's a lot of great software as a service logging solutions that are out there, but use SomaLogic because all of them suck. So even Splunk, you know it's hard when Splunk, the market leader in logging, can't build a cloud version of a logging solution, really. Sumo Logic is awesome, though. Word about key value stores. Everyone's seen the NoSQL thing come. It's cool. It's awesome. I know we actually have some folks here from Mongo and whatnot. The thing that I found is it's taken a lot of administrators a long time to kind of wrap their heads around a lot of the NoSQL stuff, by which we generally mean key value store. There are a variety of different types of databases that fall under the umbrella, but the most popular ones tend to be key value stores. And I think the reason for that is that from an administrative point of view, they don't make a lot of sense. But from a programmatic standpoint, they're amazing. MongoDB and LevelDB are two sort of my favorite sort of key value stores that are out there. And from JavaScript under Node.js, they're particularly really interesting. You can do a lot of cool stuff. And Redis. Redis is neat. It's the all-purpose everywhere caching solution. And it's really pretty cool. It's significantly better than that crap we called Memcached. So if you haven't played with Redis, definitely fun to play with. And Git. We all need to know Git. We all need to know Git. Any debate about Git is over. Git is the way. SVM and CVS will no longer torture us. We are free now. Git is fantastic. Unfortunately, it had to take somebody who didn't actually have any interest in source control to actually produce a good source control system. But it's out there. And there's a lot of good places where you can do some good courses. If you've been playing with Git, but you're like, I know the three commands, and they were great, and you want to learn a little bit more, there are some great courses that are out there, like on lynda.com. And GitHub is great, you know, use it. I would love it if more and more administrators, we would share the things that we're doing up on GitHub, right? It's not just a place for code in the classical sense, but we can put our configurations up there, our scripts for automation up there and share. And another is continuous integration. Continuous integration is all around us. It's taking over a lot of places. And it's really not that magical. If you haven't played with Jenkins, which is what most continuous integration is being coordinated through, give it a try. It's just a web interface that fires off shell scripts. Seriously, that's all it is. That's it. There's really nothing really all that magical there. I was totally bummed out the first time I played with it, because I'm like, really? That's it? Okay. And there's like open source, free solutions for continuous integration on GitHub called Travis, which you can get playing with if you don't want to set up your own server or something. But as always, standardization, standardize, standardize, standardize. You can't fix it, you can't improve it if you don't know what you're doing. And a lot of places still have trouble standardizing. The previous discussion was about checklists, right? It's 2014. I mean, we shouldn't have to convince ourselves to use checklists. But actually, I suggested a checklist recently in one application. They were like, why would we do that? We know what we need to do. Like, yeah, but there's 20 steps, and you're always forgetting one of them. I love standardization, not just because I love ITIL, but because of the fact that I really want to be able to iterate the process. So I want to take what I normally do in joint, was we would document the procedure, step one, step two, step three, step four, so that anybody could do it. Somebody else would then do the process to verify that it worked that way. And then as we were doing it, we'd be like, ugh, this is hard and sucky. You know what? I can write something that will make steps 4 through 12 be just one step. And then you just keep collapsing it until eventually there's one step. And then you eliminate that step. Automation through standardization. And frankly, you just cannot improve what you don't understand. So if you can't write it down, you probably don't understand how it works. You think you do, but you probably don't. We always want to be iterating, not to get too lean, but we always want to be iterating from current state to future state. Where are we? Where do we want to go? Transition. Compliance is generally, I think, important, and it will be more and more important in the future. If you don't have experience with or understanding of what controls, policies, and procedures are and how those fit together, like if you get exactly how those fit together, you're good. If you're not quite sure, particularly about controls, it's not something we see a lot. If you're not comfortable with the transition between controls and policy, it's definitely worth like, you know, taking a little course or reading a little bit about it to understand how they fit together, just so when the security guy comes, you don't shoot him in the face, because I've been that security guy and I ducked a lot. Learn about information classification. This is going to be more and more important as we transition things to the cloud. You got to classify your information so you can know whether or not it can go into Amazon or it needs to go into your data center or whatever. And if you're fighting fights about, like, I'm not putting that data in a public cloud, like, FIPS 199 to the rescue. Risk assessment is also an important thing. I'm dorky because I'm a system administrator and I read NIST SP 800 documents. So, you know, 39 is the one you want. It's awesome. It's a little wordy because it was run by the government, but, you know, I know we have some NIST people here, right? So, I love NIST. But in general, we all need to be leaders, particularly those of us that are here. We need to share our knowledge. We need to take initiative. And we need to make time to improve both ourselves and our infrastructure and those around us and our teams. We need to empower our colleagues across the entire organization and really be leaders. Always be leading. Most importantly, don't be a hater. All of us have a lot of pride. If there's one thing we're famous for, it's having a lot of pride and a lot of ego. And if some people think that's a male thing or a feminine thing, we're system administrators. We prove that we both have it. We need to encourage each other and others to try new things. We never want to be putting people down for trying things. We want to share successes. We want to embrace failure and learn together. When something doesn't work, don't be like, yeah, it's because it's a piece of crap. Right? Figure out why it didn't work and work through it. And assholes kill innovation. It takes one asshole in one company to just completely kill any innovation and take the fun out of anything that you do. So get rid of the asshole. And there's a business book called the No Asshole Rule, so I'm allowed to use that term without being like, because it's a business term. Seriously, stop by the bookstore at the airport on the way home, you'll see it, it's awesome. It's a good book too. And try and appreciate everything. I really think it's really important. We love to dismiss stuff all the time. But look, somebody wrote it for a reason. There was a reason that the thing was created, and there is something that it can do, and we should know what it is. So there are lots of sites that can help to learn. Instead of watching like really crappy TV, you can go and do this. OpSchool is amazing. Aveline started it. It's wonderful. Contribute to it. Lynda.com and Pluralsight and Safari Books Online have lots of books and videos. And so you can just sit there and just, you know, get a box of Fig Newtons and go to town while like learning, you know, some new Git stuff. It's just fun, and it's a lot more entertaining than most television. Code School is a place to work on some code. Google's always there to ask questions. And, you know, this presentation will be on YouTube. Tons and tons and tons of presentations are out there on YouTube for free. It's a lot more entertaining than most of the other stuff that we can spend our time on. So I'm Ben Rockwood. I am a system administrator for life. The system is changing, but I am changing with it because I am a system administrator. Thank you.